Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the line, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. What's up?
What? Nothing much.
Yeah. Well, nothing much here, too. Our weather got slightly warmer, still nice. It made it up to 76 today. I went for a couple of walks. I had my first reading club meeting or book club meeting. Unfortunately, it was just me and the lady leading it, so it's the two of us, but still. You know, got out, did something, but I have to say, we have a great lineup of poetry tonight. We have 2 contests, so we have so much in the first contest that the second one might be for carried over for next week. But our first contest, the focus is going to be on poetry inspired by the artwork of Solomith Wolfing. And I highly recommend people who haven't seen her artwork, check it out. It's she does a lot of fantasy fairy tale like stuff, but it has a very surreal feel and vibe to it. So it's definitely, we got a lineup of good stuff. So life is good. And how about you? How's your weather treating you, Rex?
mid-80s.
That's not too bad. I mean, it is still warm, but, you know, at least it's below 100. So, all right. Well, I'm actually going to go ahead, and I'm going to bring on a guest, and I'd like to welcome James to the show. Welcome, James. Glad you could join us.
Thank you for the intro.
Even then.
Someday I may come up with a clever intro, but that's all you get for now, you know. And how's your day going?
Good, actually. It's weather's nice here in Arkansas, about 75 degrees or so. So very nice kind of fallish weather.
Nice. Yep, I do enjoy that fall weather. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, now, James, you just for now want to help with comments, right? You didn't want to read?
Pretty much commentary.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. You know, as I hope that as you get more used to calling into the shows that you will consider reading, but of course I don't want to, you know, make you uncomfortable, but, you know, hopefully you'll get to that point because.
I just feel I'll be doing a disservice to the quality of the rights.
And
oh, we all feel
I understand that, but you have a good reading voice, and but I understand how you feel. But with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and hand things over to you, Rex. Let's get this ball rolling.
All right. This one's called You Catastrophe by Rumpled Poetry. Child of the butterfly, I beg of you to flee. There rises in the east a foul and noisome factory. With iron maw and blackened core, it feeds upon the trees. Child of the butterfly, run away with me. Beyond the western seas, there lies a land of verdant green, free from the effluvium of that vile factory. We cannot flee, the way is barred, the paths are closed to thee. The western seas are sundered now, that land of memory. All things must pass away at last, never again to see. We stand against the long defeat and do not bend the knee. Though dark prevail and light be lost and hope for victory, trust all will end as ever it must in new catastrophe. And poem.
Great read, Rex, and wonderful write by Rumpled Poetry. A new name for me, always glad to see a new name. And James, your thoughts on this poem?
It's kind of a sad poem because it's talking about the escaping the tree life, the polluted world, and how that it's inescapable at this point.
I like that thought. Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. The whole idea of wanting to escape. So very cool. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Actually, I'm looking at it. It's dark. I'm getting a feel of, because you had on, what was it, the western seas are sundered now, that land of memory, all things must pass away at last, never again to see. The idea of what's happening in the moment, country being torn apart, what once was in that note to the beauty of the land is being torn apart totally. So that the thought of the child with a butterfly is those who look to the land for what can be grown out of it and fed upon, and all that's disappearing because of we're not really what we once were. The thought of factory farming, generations of farmers have been pushed out, sold out, or just crumpled, and they've been picked up cheaply by people who have other things in mind. And that is not how you keep a country alive. So I think that's what he's sitting on, with the sort of it's gone, or it's on its way out the door, so to speak.
I like that. Really great observation there. And yeah, I have to say, absolutely. You know, that the wars are often by the rich to destroy that and simply destroy the lives of poor who already suffer anyways. But you know, I like how you speak on growth and change, Rex, because you know, well, first of all, Child of the Butterfly is, well, it's first of all a great reflection of the chosen prompt, which is a young girl who looks like she's like a butterfly or a moth. But the butterfly also works well for the symbolism of change or even endurance. Like if you think of the monarch butterfly and, you know, all that they go through to do their migration. And this does have a very dark, haunting feel to it. Child of the Butterfly, I beg of you to flee. Child of the Butterfly, run away with me. We cannot flee. The way is barred. The paths are closed to thee. The western seas are sundered now, that land of memory. All things must pass away at last, never again to see. There's such a feeling of acceptance of one's unfortunate circumstances, an acceptance of what cannot be. Well, amazing write by Rumpel Poetry, and I look forward to reading more of them. And what do you have next, Rex?
Manifesting Magical Merriment by Jenny DeBeek. That was yours.
All right. Manifesting Magical Merriment by Jenny Vadeep. A celestial mage with wisteria golden sage communicates with the mysterious fates, holding a levitating hourglass filled with sand. She begins to tell time with her glowing hands, whimsically mystifying and enchanting. Darkened, damp wood she is enhancing. Lifting her invisible silver-lining veil, she illuminates lives with her magical grail. Can't be seen by a human's naked eye. For protection herself, she must disguise. Roaming foreign territory puts her in danger, so she is careful to avoid all strangers. To spread ultraviolet rays of healing delight is why she comes from down from the skies at night. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, she went with a sonnet style. I haven't counted the syllables, so I won't go full on. That's okay. I like the place she had. She had a bit of fun with it. So I like the thought of a celestial mage with wisteria golden face, so she also got inline line as part of her mix, and a little bit of alliteration as well. But this imparts the notion of the moon itself with the bottom two lines, but it also hits on the idea of magic that comes from which gets illumined in the darkness and can't be seen by a human's naked eye. For protection of herself, she must disguise. Roaming foreign territory puts her in danger, so she is careful to avoid all strangers. I'm a touch note to fairies of the mist.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment. And James, your thoughts?
It's kind of a mystical sounding poem where she's writing that the hourglass is filled with sand. She begins to tell the time with glowing hands. Like she's separated from the motivator of the poem. that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Great observation. Yeah, I really like the mystical and fairy tale-like quality of this rite. A nice touch of alliteration, even with the title, Manifest in Magical Merriment. And to me, while this is a fantasy tale, I also really like how it speaks on the idea of doing good deeds without needing recognition. And I don't know if Jenny meant that, but that's what it brings to mind, you know, is that whole idea that, you know, let your good deeds be done in secret. You know, don't do them for your own glory, but rather that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, rather that, you know, people have something nice done for them without you having to get a patted on the back, you know. I really like whimsically mystifying and enchanting, dark and damp wood she is enhancing, lifting her invisible silver lining veil, she illuminates lives with her magical grail. Wonderful lines and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
A Silent Evasion by Liquid Minds Forever. Configure each gesture a quest for her rapture, a cipher embedded in raw silk's tatted lace. In view of disgrace, she concedes to her capture, knowing she can never, ever hope to save face. The monarchy reigns in spite of disdain, the bane of confusion, the court's bloody illusion. Courtesy remains to profane death's ugly stain. Obedience to her captor keeps her in seclusion. Eyewitness to murder, she feigns contains her shame. Silent and somber, she hides salient evidence. Again and again, they blame her to maim her, tame her. Secure in indenture, her tension immense. 5,000 pounds and royalty specter, inured by torturous threats, must this maiden endure. And poem.
Great read there, Rex, and an amazing write by Liquid Mind Forever. Brilliant inner and end rhyme, strong imagery throughout. I really like how this delves into and reminds us of a time in history, which, you know, there's many places and many times throughout history where women were treated as objects to be owned, as even political pawns, especially when it came to the monarchy. You know, oftentimes marriages, more often than not, marriages were not made because of love, but rather because it suited with a political agenda, or money was involved, whatever, you know, the reason that would benefit both parties. I really like the monarchy reigns in spite of disdain, the bane of confusion, the court's bloody illusion. Courtesy remains to profane death's ugly stain. Obedience to her captors keeps her in seclusion. Eyewitness to murder, she feigns, contains her shame. Silent and somber, she hides salient evidence. Again and again, they blame her to maim her tame. You can just, to me, see within the lines a story of a young woman who has seen so much, has witnessed so much ugliness in her life, and the endurance that she must keep having. So I just thought this was a wonderful take on the prompt and a strong write on the whole thought of objectifying political gain. At least that's what I get from it, you know. So wonderful, right? And James, your thoughts?
It definitely shows power from the underdog position, from the position of someone who is considered less than.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can definitely see that. Yeah. Very cool. And Rex, as always, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, from the picture and the fact that she's donned in silk, she is upstanding. And let's hit that second stanza. The monarchy reigns in spite of disdain, the bane of confusion, the coarse bloody illusion. Courtesy remains with pain, death of disdain. Obedience to her captors keeps her in seclusion. So maybe there was a coup in the court, and being that she's outstanding and popular, they cannot extinguish her life, but they can make her miserable by keeping her self-contained. And the fact that she sits there, eyewitness to murder, she feigns, contains her shame, silent and solemn, she hides salient evidence. So she's not strong enough to actually stand up, and that's part of her shame. And the idea of 5,000 pounds in royalty scepter, inured by torturous threats, must this maiden endure? I'm told with the 5,000 pounds, hey, they just took the money, kept it, and they kept her along with it. That keeps all parties kind of in a stalemate, because you can't take one without making sure that she perishes in the meantime. So it's a great ploy, but it's also a story of what did happen, or what could have happened way in the past.
Absolutely. I like that. Very cool. Great observation. All right, go ahead and bring us to what we have next.
We got Loving a Strange Kind of Evil by Time Teller.
All right. It's a funny evil that spreads from out of wallpaper. Read a 60s book, a hippie collection on a shelf. LSD floats the parks on a Sunday afternoon, and they come out of the walls. She's in love with a fairy, strange folk from a strange universe, slapped another dimension. So in love, she turned, and capitalism is a silver lining until the 80s broke it. Now war looms, and the wallpaper moves, faces in the walls, read it in some book. Follow them to to another dimension. Bubbles slapped on the side of bubbles, and the world blows too hard today. Do we overwrite, playing the drama queen of wordiness without gaps? And they come out of the walls, down the garden, out of the trees. They hunt us, make us their bitches, and somehow we are tethered forever. End poem. All right. I really like that. That is an intriguing write. And Rex, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on this poem.
Well, the note to LSD kind of walks itself on a number of levels. You got Aleister Crowley in there, and you've got the guy who wrote the, I forget what the book's name, about going on an LSD trip. I mean, you've got the idea of... Maybe a little bit of
the guy who went to Las Vegas.
Oh no, I know I'm just I wasn't thinking about him. I was thinking about somebody else back in the 50s.
Okay.
He wrote about his doing acid. He wrote all about it. But yeah, Hunter Thompson. That kind of walks in this one too, as does a little Alice in Wonderland, the fairies and all that type. But the coming out of the walls, that kind of hits on the idea of everything comes out of the woodwork, so to speak, in a thought, because she hits on this, what was it? And the world blows hard today. Do we overwrite, playing the drama queen of wordiness without gaps? And they come out of the walls, down the garden, out of trees. They hunt us, make us their bitches, and somehow we are tethered forever. The hunt could be the... what comes out of the woodwork, you know, because of what you're putting out. But it also could be the thought of what comes crawling out of you itself as you get into the right.
I like that. I can totally see that. That whole Alice in Wonderland vibe, and I really like your references, because yeah, that whole LSD line does put a different twist on it. So very cool. And James, your thoughts?
I'm kind of focused on the she is in love with a very strange folk from a strange universe slapped another dimension. So in love, she turned and capitalism in a silver lining until the 80s broke it. It's like an anti-capitalism poetry.
It does kind of seem that way. Yeah, yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that. And, yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, though, isn't it? There's a quirkiness to this, that, as Rex is saying, has a whole Alice in Wonderland vibe. And yet, in some ways, it kind of goes all over the place, but yet there's a consistent theme. And I think there's kind of idea, this theme of those things that we become addicted to, those things that we think we fall madly in love with, but they're just rather an hallucination of our own hopes. I did think it was absolutely intriguing to bring in. So in love, she's turned, and capitalism is a silver lining until the 80s broke it. That whole idea that capitalism would only stand up for so long. And the end lines, I think, speak to me on addiction. They come out of the walls, down the garden, out of trees. They hunt us, make us their bitches, and somehow we are tethered forever. Perhaps it's being tethered to an addiction, or perhaps it's being tethered to the people who control the banks and control the system. You know, I really like the layeredness and thought within this right. So very well done.
Capitalism is a silver lining. It's a note to the story that she gets into, and the fact that there's more in there, but the 80s broke it. That kind of hits back on the idea of cocaine, crack, and heroin had a big spike in the 80s. There was a ton of money coming in. So the idea of books, movies, and that type of stuff she might have gotten into is also being overlaid with another kind of evil.
Did that actually really make sense? I like that. Of course, it makes sense with you saying it, but very cool, very cool. You know, that's what I love about these shows, is the opportunity to learn from each other, because, and I'm glad you said something more, Rex, because that did help me to see that part in a different way. So very much appreciate it. Very cool. And, it's interesting how there are those how oftentimes things that are evil are not always perceived as being evil until they become our downfall. So interesting stuff, for sure. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
A Beautiful Bad Dream by Ben Hart. Runaway. One could measure it by the lying of their lungs. When air often sung couldn't even unmute the silence of September street. One knows the world of woe a wolf had just stepped into when anxiety's vertigo stopped twisting level roads. The heartbeat is the last to go, unechoed. Existence fails to cease even though it is unlived. And squall, where tides crawl doesn't reach, will rip away the meek to be remembered, to be grieved. In dreams between ricocheting requiems, never to be seen again. Since September 15th, 2015. It was easier then when I didn't understand and didn't have to deal with it, when I didn't recognize your thoughts in my own voice, when I thought I still had a choice, when I still had my friend, I realized the true weight of your betrayal and understood why I've been so damn anxious in this life. It was a thing you thought I couldn't forgive, and so you hid it because you couldn't. You set me up, took my love, took my hope, took my smile, took my breath, took my trust, ripped it all out to make space for your aching. So you wouldn't have to walk the long road home on your own. You trusted me to fall, and it took my all, but I am still standing tall, casting shadows over shadow of sores, and looking for my friend behind every little red door. Say hello to God for me, and I'll give death your regards when I see her again. I forgive you for what you did, because you may think all you did create was pain, but without it, then heart would only ever have been a beautiful, bad dream. Goodbye. I am nothing, a string of unlived uprisings, maybe. A sundial, a shadow, a ship without time, child of time, not of life, of thought, not blood, of loss, not love, of loss, of love, I am nothing. A string of unlived uprisings, maybe, a falling star. But they won't mark the time of my goodbye. And boom.
Great read there, Russ. And what a wonderful write by Ben, as always. Truly brilliant. And James, your thought?
Really good read. Oh, my gosh. Really incredible read. This is a really complex write. It's talking about the reach to it's talking about like how everything's been taken away from them, but yet they have something more. To be honest with you, this is a really complex poem.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Ben is often one of those you do have to do more than one read of to really take an opportunity to absorb it and, you know, take it all in and let it kind of just rest. And, you know, just, you know, regurgitate on it or whatever, you know, the word is. But, yeah, I get that. I get that. And, Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
The first part, the runaway, I think part of that is himself, although he's just almost describing that street itself and the person on it. Because he hits on the idea, a wolfing just stepped into him when anxiety's vertigo starts twisting level roads. Because you've got, there's a fork there. So you got a choice in which way to go. And you don't really have it in the moment. Because he hits on to and squall where the tide's call doesn't reach up, doesn't reach, will rip away the meek to be remembered, to be grieved, in dream between. Ricocheting requiems, never to be seen again. There's almost a note of loss of self in there. Now that second one, since December 15, 2015, that really sets himself into the piece itself. Because he gets on a, you set me up, took my love, my hope, my smile, my breath, my trust, ripped it all out to make space for your aching. You took all best parts of me and took them all out so you could inhabit my space. So he's either actually talking about someone who did this to him or he's talking about the other side of himself. And he hits that with the back end of this. Say hello to God for me and I'll give death your regards when I see her again. I forgive you for what you did because you may think all you did was but without it. Ben Hart would only ever have been a beautiful, bad dream. So he's offering up, even though he's hated the idea of what she's done, he's offering up almost a note of thankfulness despite, because otherwise what he has to offer verbally might not hold the same impact as he feels with it now, because he's got, well, I wouldn't say cherished memories, but they do hold a note to that which he draws upon. The back end, the goodbye, I like the thought, I am nothing, a string of unlived uprisings, maybe a sundial, a shadow, a ship without tide, child of time, not of life, of thought, not blood, of loss, not love, of loss, of love, I am nothing. Again, he's pointing right back to that little tidbit in the middle of that second stanza where you took everything. Yes, but everything on the back end won't mark the time of my goodbye. So he's, even though he's born of what happened in the first stanza, and he's thankful with that note in the second vignette, the third one, it hints and hits on the idea it may all come for nothing, because no one will really know the center and truth of me because of what happened in the middle of that second vignette.
Absolutely. Wonderful, thorough observations there, Rex. Yeah, I really enjoy and appreciate how so often Ben writes about what seems to be a personal journey of discovery. I really like the line, "The Silence of September Street." You know, it could be an actual street, but it's also that representation of how autumn, while briefly beautiful, eventually represents the process of dying, or the process of renewal. I too really liked that line about, Ben Hart would only have ever been a beautiful bad dream. You know, there's, for all of us, you know, all our experiences shape who we are. The painful experiences, I think especially, though, shape the person we become and, you know, add layers to ourselves. You set me up, took my love, took my hope, took my smile, took my breath, took my trust, ripped it all out to make space for your aching. There's such an emotional impact to those lines, speaking on the idea of someone who only wanted to temporarily fill their own emptiness rather than consider how it would hurt the other person. And I like that the third part of the vignette, he labels goodbye. That idea of knowing when it is you need to part, when it is, even if it's that parting from, you know, like your old self of who you used to be. Child of time, not of life, of thought, not blood, of loss, not love, of loss, of love, I am nothing. I really like how this feels like within those lines, it has that whole thought of, you know, just that existential breakdown, or, you know, like just feeling as if parts of yourself are falling off, like the way that chunks of snow fall off the roof while, you know, at the end of winter, and it's slushy and it's ugly, but, you know, underneath something beautiful is coming out of it. You know, so amazing, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Strength and Moving Forward Together by Forgotten Dreams.
All right. Oh, and just so you know, Rex, I sent you a note. Strength and Moving Forward Together by Forgotten Dreams. It was February when you walked out the front door, ashen skies swollen with a reservoir of silent dirges, volumes spoken in a single glance, your pale form blinding in front of the red door, now burned behind eyelids. Sleepless night bookend, the time I last saw watery eyes, shimmering like Italian grottos, to my frenzied clawing of our reunited embrace. Standing broken like a kintsugi vase, invisible scars still raised, my fingers trace the history of us across the map of your body. Arms weave together like a blanket, pulling each other closer, trembling lips meet as absolution melts between us and poem. And what a beautiful emotive rite. And James, your thoughts? I guess James' battery level must have ran out. So Rex, your thoughts?
It was February when you walked out the front door. And then that second stanza, volume spoken in a single glance, your pale form blinding in front of the red door, now burned behind eyelids. I the first two stanzas off about the notion he walked out because she did something. The sleepless night book and the time I last saw watery eyes, shimmering like Italian grottoes gives you the imagery, not of tears, but of something warm in the moment, to my frenzy clawing of our reunited embrace. Obviously, something happened in the meantime to get them on back on track. And then she hits a standing broken like kintsugi vase, invisible scar still raised. Again, now the point back is to him on that level. So something went between the two of them on hard notes. Then the fingers trace the history of us across the map of your body. So he's also got the scars that she's nibbling at as well. Now the back end, the absolution melts between us, which kind of hits on back on the idea that, yeah, while one of them may have done something, the other didn't help it along so much. So the absolution comes, and I guess the big end is of both their transgressions, whatever they might have been at the moment.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. Great observation.
What the hell are you looking at?
Are you getting the puppy eyes?
Yeah, she wants something. What do you want?
She wants a steak. She wants you to go get her a steak. That sounds good.
No, I don't get steak. She didn't get fucking steak.
Well, I thought this was an absolutely beautiful poem. I really liked volume spoken in a single glance, your pale form blinding in front of the red door, now burned behind eyelids. And, you know, it's interesting because oftentimes a red door can symbolize luck, but yet at the same time, you can think of red representing the heart, blood, even like the redness of the veins behind the eyelids, or the way your eyes turn red when you cry. And the standing broken like a kintsugi vase, that was particularly clever. The vases, you know, that get the cracks get filled with gold. You know, it just creating beauty out of pain. And arms weave together like a blanket, pulling each other closer. Trembling lips meet as absolution melts between us. I really like how those end lines bring on thoughts of healing together, of thoughts of, you know, love, healing the cracks, healing the wounds, and, you know, just that sense of forgiveness that brings people back together. I also really like the imagery of the time I last saw watery eyes shimmering like Italian grottos. That is brilliant imagery. Excellent write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
What Life Brings by Hall of Poetry, and you've got a SoundCloud.
Yes, we do. So let me mosey on over there, and here we go.
What life brings. Easy as a child to stay with what is, stay with the isness of now, experiencing happy and sad in turn, not lost in the grudges a chattering mind brings. She will never grow old, never be anything but a little girl, a sense of fun always here, hand in hand with the creativity settling in presence brings. Yet even here wounds can scar, wounds from innocence lost or never allowed, paralyzing her older self with fear, with the not enough feeling separation brings. She will witness rebirth after rebirth, witness the butterfly within breaking free, unfurling its wings time after time, urged on by the healing self-compassion brings. The sun always shines behind the cloud, as love shines within and through each inner child, patiently waiting to be seen and loved, to allow the peace truly knowing oneself brings. End poem. Sam Hall, Hall of Poetry.
Wonderful read and write, Hall of Poetry. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then making a recording is the next best thing, because then we get to see your poetry, or hear, sorry, not see, hear, got my senses mixed up there, in your voice. And I have to say, I really like this one. There's something about this one that pulls at my heartstrings, the way it speaks on the innocence of childhood and how children see things in such a beautiful and creative way, you know, experiencing happy and sad in tune, not lost in the grudges, a chattering mind brings. She'll never grow old, never be anything but a little girl, a sense of fun, always have, hand in hand with the creativity. But and then there's that transition into adulthood, where the world bombards you and you start to feel paralyzed with that thought of not being good enough. And I love how the ending speaks on rebirth, a discovery of self. Because, you know, we live in a world filled with cliques from schoolward on, you know, even in adulthood, although it's not as bad, there's cliques. There's, you know, a looking for acceptance. And what you have to learn to do is to embrace and love your inner child and your individuality. I mean, at least that's what this spoke to me on. I really like, she will witness rebirth after rebirth, witness the butterfly within breaking free, unfurling its wing time after time, urged on by the healing self-compassion brings. And I really appreciate how that reminds us that healing, especially from any traumatic event, is not a straight and narrow road. It often has a lot of stops. It has a lot of steps backwards before you can move forward again. So brilliant, right, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I get that, and I don't disagree with it. But from that second stanza down, I saw, Claudia from The Vampire Lestat, him and Louis, when they brought over the child, Claudia. She will never grow old, never be anything but a little girl.
Yeah.
Yet even here, wounds can scar, wounds from innocence lost or never allowed. Paralyzing girl with self with fear with a not enough feeling separation brings. The notes say, even though she was a few hundred years old, was still a little girl. With each rebirth, with each feeding, she got a little bit more older, contemptuous, and that bled into the youthfulness that she was forever shaken with, which ended up as the thing that destroyed it because of it. Patiently waiting to be seen and loved again has me thinking of Claudia. So, nice piece. I like it.
I could see that. I can definitely agree with that, although, you know, I still think there's merit in my view of it. But you know what? I think what's great is that there's merit in both views. And it's awesome to me the way one single poem can bring out different thoughts from poets. And you know, when you said that and I started to look at the picture, I really started to look at the face and the blonde hair, and it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that being like Claudia from Interview with a Vampire. So very cool, very cool. And what do we got next, Rex?
The Lips of a Grieving Widow by Mahadi Campbell.
I'm sorry, is it my turn?
Yep.
Okay. Good thing one of us can keep track. All right. I am feeling royal today, a crown perched haphazardly on my aching head. I am thinking of my dead, threaded ghosts of golden stitching, fraying softly on my dress. Oh, to be royal is to be lonely, a road paved only with memory, fading fast, underfed. I am queen of silent rooms, eyes downcast, the musty scent of gloom permeating the air. To be clear, I do it best. I stare like the devil, near possessed. I burn like a rebel, fighting to protest. I reminisce with the saintliness of a priest. I never cease. That is why I am not invited to the feast. That is why I am royal apart, the only one that ever want, the only one they ever want to depart. That is why you shudder away from me, Her Highness, the goddess of death. My shadow is the swishing of a scythe, the murder of a mind. My crown, dripping onyx, reminds of the passing of time, and you, Mayfly, would rather close unkind and fearful eyes. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, a dark look past the note from the lips of a grieving widow. Doesn't sound like she's doing. She's kind of enjoying. I'm feeling royal today. I'm thinking of my dead. I am queen of sonnet runes. To be clear, I do it best. I stare like a devil near possessed. I burn like a rebel fighting to protest. I reminisce with the saintliness of a priest. I never cease. That is why I am not invited to the feast. That is why I am royal apart, the only thing they ever want to depart. So donned her crown of grief easily and with gusto. That is why you shoulder away from me, Her Highness, the goddess of death. My shadow is the swishing of a sky, the murder of a mind. She clearly enjoys the fact that she portrays fear so easily, maybe even a little bit disgust, to the point where they wish she had been the one that died rather than her husband. Definitely not somebody you want to fuck with, because she holds all the cards.
Yep, yep. This is definitely a woman who's drunk on power, definitely has an appetite for blood and destruction. At least, you know, that's what I get from it. A wonderful dark tale told. I like how she speaks in the a voice of someone who looks down. But I also feel like there's almost this thought of a personification of death and the power of death that cannot be escaped from. That is why you shudder away from me, Her Highness, the goddess of death. My shadow is the swishing of a scythe, the murder of a mind. The murder of a mind is a really powerful line because it's not just speaking on physical death, but the whole idea of putting an avenue of thought, ceasing, not allowing people to think for themselves, but rather directing them I hate when I blank out on a simple word. Through force. Like you see this ruler that rules by force and fear. And won't allow for any room for disagreement. So wonderful lines and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Her by Jane Hatfield. Arrayed in purple and gold, I remember her. Head crowned with flowers, I remember her. Majestic with kaleidoscope tail, I remember her. Veil descending from fore to tail, veil of finest of sheer fabric, veil that frames her despondent eyes. No matter how I try to imagine her happy, no matter how I try to make her face match the rest of her visage, no matter that look, a mountain in memory stream, that moment will shape all the rest of my moments till my moment in this world ends. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and a wonderful write by James. I'm really glad that he was inspired. He immediately takes the imagery from the picture, which works so well, arrayed in purple and gold. I remember her, head crowned with flowers. I remember her. And it feels like even though he's writing to the picture, it has a personal feel to it. I think to me, especially in those last two stanzas, and it's not a particularly long poem, but it makes an impact, especially with its use of repetition, no matter how, no matter how, no matter, no matter where I go, no matter what I try to do to distract myself, I cannot forget the sadness in this person's face. And it's almost to me, I think it speaks to me on the moment when somebody realizes how truly unhappy perhaps a friend or a person they're in a relationship with is, and how that kind of changes your perspective, and that moment will shape all the rest of my moments till my moment in this world ends. Some things they stick with you forever, you won't find that peace that you need until you go to, that you reach the end of life. You reach that, death. I'm trying to think of a fancy way to say it, but, the big sleep. But, wonderful write by James, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I'm thinking literal. Something, you come across this painting in a museum and it just kind of speaks to you in the moment because it is captivating, the image itself. And you hit on those notes, the purple and gold, I remember. Head crown, cloud, I remember. Majestic with kaleidoscope, I remember. And then the veil, the fabric, how it frames her despondent eyes. And then that note that no matter how I try to imagine her happy, no matter how make her face match the rest of her thoughts, you can't. So there's that understanding change those things that you can, and those things that you cannot, you put to the side because they don't work. No matter how much you try to change those things that you hang on to, that you know you can't change, it always ends up with a forceful note of pity on yourself because you can't do it. And that's where you hit from the back end. That moment will shape all the rest of my moments till my moment in this world ends. That knowledge gained in that moment of understanding. Some things you can change, but you must understand those things that you cannot change and set them aside because they will always be your downfall.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, that you know, to me makes sense. You know, the idea of accepting what you cannot change and, you know, changing the things that you can. And you are right. I do have to agree that there are pieces of art that speak so directly to the soul that, you know, they just stick with you. So great comment there. All right. What do we got next?
Three Times Charming the Forest by I Am Snail Nixon.
All right. I am no longer listening to the voices, only the trees. I'd forgotten where I was rooted for a while. I am reclaiming my own headspace. Get out, get out, get out of my forest. I am no longer lost. The trees sing me to sleep with tales of wise, silent observation and patience, of course. But most entertaining are the tales of tales chasing each other around and how they try to run from the forest. But they are always called home. The voices tried their best, and I was damned for sure, I thought. But the call came, and the wind in my hair felt different, infinite, and home. And what a beautiful write. Oh, my goodness. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that was easy. It reminds me of that. Can't see the forest for the trees. And what's the other way around? Can't see the trees for the forest. This one walks on, you know, on that note. You can't see the trees for the forest, but there's so many voices running around within that forest that you can't see the literality of that which is in front of you. The trees sing to sleep with tales of wise, silent observation and patience, of course. But most entertaining are the tales of tales. That's when realization dawns, because chasing each other around and how they try to run from the forest, but they're always called home. The idea of actually finding in the moment, yes, I can see the trees within that forest, because you pay attention and you push away all that other detritus so you can actually see that that single note of self in there. And that's what she's hitting on.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I really like, first of all, I like her use of spacing to create that sense of pause and anticipation within the read. I like how you mentioned, Rex, about not seeing the forest for the trees. And, you know, it's interesting because my first thought when I hear voices, I think of somebody who's, you know, having a psychosis breakdown and hearing voices. But there could also be, as you were mentioning, that thought of just listening to the voices of the world, listening to too many people and their opinions, and really trying to find your own inner voice, you know, but the voices tried their best, and I was damned for sure, I thought, but the call came, and the wind in my hair felt different, infinite. That ending speaks on a freedom found within oneself. You know, I like that she brings up observation and patience, because sometimes you can look around, and in life, there can be these moments where it can be so overwhelming to make a choice. And and you have to step back and you have to observe the situation and you have to wait patiently because you have to have a certain kind of wisdom to just know when to wait rather than rush into something. So amazing, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Journey Through Art by Jody Melkins. With a canvas roll in hand and her imagination, vivid colors began to merge and fade. The immortal soul, a dance of light and shade, where dreams and soulsmith brushstrokes gently braid. For in her vision, pure and rare, captured is the essence of the soul's glare. Looking beyond the mortal coil, it sees the sacred, the eternal soil. In the vast expanse where her creativity takes flight, the immortal soul shines ever bright, guided by the North Star's brilliant glow, on a journey where even shooting stars dare go. She brought to life the Pintura primed, a vision of a soul illuminated in the eye of her mind. Eyes gaze deep of ancient lore, telling tales of lifetimes lived before. Her hand translated more than a view. It painted a journey profound and true, of a soul that wandered yet remained whole, an ode to the everlasting immortal soul. From birth to death and all between, the soul's song remains unheard, unseen. But in her painting, its essence does unfold, a story of spirit beautifully told. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Jody. Great rhyme flow, wonderful imagery. I really like how he, you know, as his title says, he takes us through this journey of the artwork, and it really pays tribute to the artist herself, you know. The immortal soul, a dance of light and shade where dreams and solemnest brush strokes gently braid. She actually did grow up in a very spiritual household. And was a very spiritual person herself. And you can see that in so much of her artwork. I really like the imagery in this. I like how, you know, he shows us how there's this essence within the artwork. And I think that's true for all art, is there's a part of themselves that the artist puts into it. I also really like her hand translated more than a view. It painted a journey profound and true of a soul that wandered yet remained whole, an ode to the everlasting immortal soul. I can definitely see that in this painting, in the way the aura, the circle of light surrounds the figure. There's this wonderful feeling of immortality and power within the strokes of light put within the painting. And I think Jody does a fine job of showing us that. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that kind of reminds me of a snow globe.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Because you got the light that shines through the back and a little bit that touches up on the foot on the left side, but it doesn't have the snow inside it, so to speak. But it does remind one of the fact that it holds itself within that type of sphere and takes us on a journey through that with a canvas roll in hand and imagination, vivid colors began to merge and fade. I like the role of the rhyme itself. Instead of stringing it out line by line, he's interlaced it in between. So the longer lines walk themselves into, because you got fade in that third line, and by the time you get down to the last line, which is the seventh, you've got the finality on that note of a rhyme with braid to finish out. So, and he does that through the whole thing. So you get the note of a rhyme, but it's not in the particular view of what might be considered normal. So it, And next one is the rig running straight through it because you can follow the view of itself, the line, how he's written. So I like it for that. It does a for inner vision, pure and rare, captures the essence of the soul's glare. And that's nice there too, because it does offer the touch from the glare in the background. Looking beyond the mortal coin to see the sacred, the eternal soul, soil. Again, a reference to how life walks through. Everybody gets returned to the soil. Vast expanse, again, that kind of paints the note to the globe itself, where her creativity takes flight. See, there's an eternal note to that, too, because he hits on the thought of the globe itself with that vast expanse. And one can dream within that notion of what might be. And he's taken that right through to the end. So, nicely done, Jamie.
Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see that. Very cool. Great comment there, Rex. And what do we have next?
There it is. Of Love's Lost by Eric Stenson. Yes,
hey, Rex.
Yeah.
I had sent you a note. I was kind of hoping to save this one for next week because I was unable to get the SoundCloud into the studio.
Okay. Now I'll go get the next one. I Know Where Dragons Live by Weaver, and you've got a SoundCloud for that. I hope.
Yes, we do. So let me go ahead and mosey on over there, and here we go.
I know, my sweet darlings, that all you instill is fear. No one understands you the way I do. You're only ever defensive, not meaning to be repulsive. You're prejudged, found wanting. This I know. Snake, you're not cold or slimy. Your skin, beautifully patterned, those sinuous movements, sleek, almost sensual. Iguana, you're a large arboreal, a herbivore species of lizard, with a 20-year lifespan. Impressive and friendly. Crocodile, with your wide smile, I feel there may be more shoes walking the streets than your brethren still breathing. Are those tears? Finally, dragon, dear myth, if they only knew that you and your rider are as one, symbiotic, your world is now hidden within a mountain. Keep the fires burning. If my passionate defense of these creatures touches even one person, changes a mind, I am pleased. Though now I must flee because I know where dragons live.
Wonderful lead-in right there, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated, and I'm really glad that you were inspired. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a hell of a bite off that painting or drawing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I like to note with the snake, you're not cold, it's slimy, it's skin, due to the patent, no sinuous moves, click on essential. There is a note that snakes weren't always looked upon as what they are today. They were, because they shed their skins, they were thought of as those creatures that could be reborn each time they did that. The iguana, nice. I like that note, the humor in that note with the crocodile with your wide smile. I fear there may be more shoes walking the streets than your breath and still breathing. Are those tears? That note to people who offer up the crocodile tears. And then finally, the last two with the dragon, keep the fires burning. Yeah, and I know where dragons live. That might be a double dip.
Oh, my God.
double dicks and dragons actually living, and the fact that some of the people out there are dragons in their attitudes.
Yep, that is so true. That is so true. But I do like the humor and the grinning of the crocodile. I really enjoy and appreciate this poem and her take on the prompt as she takes a look at animals that are usually either repulsed, as she says, you are only ever defensive, not meaning to be repulsive. You're prejudged, found wanting. This I know. You know, and I feel like that's also a representation of how people judge other people, you know, perhaps for the way they act or, you know, not understanding that their behavior is for a certain reason or, you know, not understanding, you know, like or judging for how a person looks. And I have to say, I know my daughter would really appreciate this poem because she loves, you know, snakes and lizards. And, you know, and the crocodile tears was a great part. And, you know, of course, the dragon. I really, really love that ending. If my passion defense of these creatures touches even one person, changes a mind, I am pleased. Though now I must flee because I know where dragons live. That is just a smile-inducing ending. So very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
The Big Friend by Diego Starobrenik. That one's yours.
All right. And I see Ziggy hanging out on the board who says, this whole poem kind of created a sense of wonder, especially the end. Very cool. Very cool. I like that. All right. The Big Friend by Diego Zerbrenic. Sometimes I wonder why a beast protects a fair little girl. Its scales are huge and hard as steel. Its eyes are cold as fear. Its 60 unequal fangs could instantly carve any tiger. But inside its cavern jaws, over its humid yellow tongue, rests a sweet pubertal girl with her golden falling hair down the lips of the dragon. What did the perverse reptile find in her innocent loveliness? An enchanting scent, a sense of peace, the beauty that overwhelms? How does she find confidence in sleeping sheltered by its maw, on the soft mattress of its tongue and the shield of its palate? Is there a subtle eroticism, that desire to flow between them, but is paralyzed by her dazzling innocence and the monstrosity of its appearance? What happens in her dreams where the dragon snores and when the dragon snores and yawns? Today, girls want to be brave and warlike. Maybe there was a magical exchange in which the dragon gave her its strength and its ancient, fierce force of nature was transmuted into something we must take care of. Who's the child? Who's the beast? End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Makes for an interesting kitty story and a bite with the questions. What comes between why the beast decides to offer up that protection to a little girl and what happens between them that makes it such an easy coexistence. And again, the back end offers up also the note of if one becomes the other, then who is who and what is what?
I like that thought. I like that. Very cool. Yeah, I really like his writing. I'm fairly new to me, you know, and Diego, and I'm looking forward always to reading more of him. And I really appreciate him writing for the show. I have to say, if you know, anybody who hasn't done so, if you're looking at this poem, when you get an opportunity, click on the link he's provided, because he actually wrote to one of the pictures that was not as a contest prompt, but that was okay because I always tell people when it comes to, you know, break on through shows and a lot of the prompts I put up, you know, if you find something by the same artist and it's not offered up in the competition, that's okay. Go for it. You know, if that's what inspires you. And I like how he took a look at this picture and you can actually, the when you look at the picture, it very much looks like his description of it. He really plays off of that well. You know, and the description of how she rests, where it says, how does she find confidence in sleeping sheltered by its maw on the soft mattress of its tongue and the shield of its palate? And I like how he goes in these different lines of thought, like, is there something, this subtle eroticism, is there something wrong going on here? Or is this a complete innocence and our perception of it is wrong because of our experiences with the evil in the world? Today, girls want to be brave and warlike. You know, times have changed. Life has changed. And oftentimes, difficulties going through make you have to put up that brave warrior-like front, which, you know, I think it's important to be brave. You know, but at the same time, when that bravery is because you've been hurt over and over again, it's in a form of protection. You know, it's just a sad thing. But I really think he does a wonderful job to me of delving into the potential psychology of the painting. And I like that he keeps asking questions about the how and the why and the purpose of it all, and where, how and when did their connection form between the dragon and the child. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And right, yeah, I already asked you your thoughts. Okay, sorry. What do we got next, Rex?
To Be Expected by Bill Schiller. Preparing to abandon, but not allowed to abort, a flowing gown can disguise what prying eyes distort. The bleeding, labored breathing, heaving pain, lost innocence is the tarnishing from an unplanned stain. Shifting, kicking, a foreign force is fretted within, fetal frame. Will he be healthy? Will he approve of his name? Will his father expect to gain weight? From the slivers of dawn to the thickness of night, shivers from sickness and embarrassment of riches, the glorious genetic gathering just out of sight. No matter princess or peasant, a pregnancy may not be so pleasant. By any style, rely on smile, at finish of extent, between each jolt and jump, no matter how livid the jump, or judgments during grope, fuss at every festive thump, sit down and rest your feet, gently rub the baby bump and repeat.
Great read, Rex. Yes. Sorry, I didn't wait for that, but great read. Bill writes well on the struggles that many women go through with pregnancy, you know, and, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think being a mother, despite dealing with teenagers, is a wonderful thing and really a blessing. And so is life. But, you know, I have to acknowledge that, you know, it's not easy. And, you know, especially, you know, and the questions in there. I mean, I like that he puts questions in there that I think any parent, mother and father, can often worry about, like, will it be healthy? And then there's also, you know, will he approve of his name? Will his father accept gained weight? You know, that question, will his father accept gained weight, reminds me of, what was it, back in the 80s or 90s or something like that, watching, was it Maury Povich or some of those other type of shows, those horrible daytime shows where people would be yelling at each other and, you know, you get the guy going, she can't be gaining weight. You know, and I don't know. But, yep, definitely a great write on the fears and struggles faced. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Yeah, I'll go along with that. But the back end was where he offered up the humor. Where was it? No matter princess or peasant, the pregnancy may not be so pleasant. By any style, resign or smile, as finish of expense between each jolt and jump. No matter how vivid the pump or judgment's during growth, foster every festive pump. Sit down and rest your feet and gently rub the baby bump and repeat. A little bit of humor on the back end.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And what do we got next, Rex?
After Dave's disappearance.
All right. And this is now we're moving have rights from the second contest, which is actually an 8-spots-only contest, and I only did one painting, though I really like this artist, so I might do more of her paintings. And I don't know the name of the painting, but it's by Sarah Fine Pick, and it's kind of a sensual painting. It very much looks like a sexual picture, but it's done in a surreal way to where, you know, everything looks like it's made of winter, made of ice. It's really difficult to describe. But when I saw it, you know, because I wanted to run an 8-spots-only contest, I saw this painting and I thought, you know, I see the sensuality in this, but I see also the representation of both life and death and so much that I think people can pull out of this. And I thought, I'm going to do 8 spots and I'm going to see what 8 people get out of this painting. So with that being said, sorry for that. This is After Dave's Disappearance by K.F. Heartless. After Dave's disappearance, a metamorphosis of earth and sky, the moon mounts her black steed, virgin limbs bow from the redwood trees. As she rides into the night sky, a hot air balloon drifting from peak to peak, navigating the constellation's maze, in search of self-fulfilling truth. Her exhales form the dippers, the Milky Way trails from her open gown, and after she makes her nightly rounds, the spa-like clouds cool her feet down. She must gallop until pleasure erupts, a speck of dust, a shooting star, one to be coveted from afar. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that was quite the bit out of the picture itself, because it kind of hints along the moon rising and rolling the heavens, because she hits them with a set piece. A hot air balloon drifting from peak to peak, navigating the constellation's maze in search of self-fulfilling truth. That right there, kind of that whole second stanza kind of hits on the moon itself, but she's rolling into the central angle. And that thought with she must gallop until pleasure up, suspects of dust, a shooting star, one to be coveted from afar, kind of hints at maybe someone who's a little out of reach of most people.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, you could see that. you could see that. I really like navigating the constellation maze in search of self-fulfilling truth. It's that whole idea to me of that self-fulfilling prophecy where you keep saying something will happen. You keep, you know, basically you keep this negative attitude that makes the thing happen that you swore was going to, but it wouldn't have if you had just, you know, stopped pushing it to happen. I really thought this had powerful imagery and metaphors. A wonderful sense of movement. She really brought the painting to life, and she did bring the sensuality into it, especially in the line, she must gallop until pleasure erupts, a speck of dust, a shooting star, one to be coveted from afar. And I feel like that speaks on, like, as you were saying, kind of the idea of somebody who's out of reach, one that cannot be had and held is the idea that I get. It almost feels like the idea of a person who hops from one lover to the next, just for that brief moment of satisfaction, only to just move forward into something else. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Story Will You Tell by Liquid Mind Forever. This tended extension that cup of invoke, cold joke of prevention contentions provoked, amid strife and chaos, an uplifting vein, contained an attention gaining the rein. From dissonant chimeras, discontent remained, stained from insurgent when coaxed times of bane. Forfeit past roots, give up morose refrains, torture and violence for hellfire ordained. Wake up, conspirators, take no more captures. Enough, enough, man's but his nature's culture. Vultures procure, ensured by our fear, isn't it clear we're drawn to death here? Let's go, calculation, culmination is near. Hear me, O children, as I excommunicate unclear. Grab hold of the lesson, let go of the old. If you ignore the same old story, the same old story will be told. And boom.
Great read, Rex, and another amazing write by Deborah. I'm always impressed with her. This was beautifully written rhyming couplets. You know, and I always say that, you know, rhyming couplets, you know, I'm always impressed with people who do them because you really do have to be very precise with your meter and rhyme, you know, given that you only have two lines to perfect it in. And not that you shouldn't always be consistent as much as possible, but, you know, that's just, you know, something about couplets. I like how the main message I get from this, and I really do think it has brilliant and hard-hitting lines, is on throwing off the yoke and taking control. This is a rite that speaks on oppression. From dissonant chimeras, discontent remains, stains from insurgence once copes times of vain. Forfeit past roots, give up morose refrain, torture and violence, what hellfire gains. Wake up, conspirators, take no more captures. Enough, enough, man's but his nature's culture. We learn from the culture we are raised in. And, you know, this is such an empowering poem for all people, to realize that there comes a time when you have to stand up against the powers that be. So amazing write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'll go along with that, but back end of this, grab hold of the lesson, let go of the old. If you ignore, the same old story will be told. Grab hold of the lesson, yes. Letting go of the old, if you let go of the old, then you're actually dooming yourself because you've got to remember that which happened in old. Otherwise, that last line does come true. The same old story will be told. You have to grab the lesson. You have to remember. Otherwise, you're destined to repeat the same old story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true. Amen to that. And what do we have next, Rex?
Angelic Love by Betty Page.
All right. Skating blues, illuminating bright hues, swimming deep oceans, gliding upon waves, tumbling, crashing down fierce, neath fireworks high, spinning, spiraling, shimmering so angelic, glistening sweet kiss, intense, dynamic, powerful magnetic force, spilling within us, flowing chemistry, energies drifting through souls, orgasmic visions, dreamily sparkles, moonlight's enchantment so high, intoxicating, sweet cascading glues, illuminating bright hues, swimming deep oceans, gliding upon waves, tumbling, crashing down piers, neath fireworks high, spinning, spiraling, shimmering, so angelic, glistening, sweet kiss, intense, dynamic, powerful magnetic force, spilling within us, comfort and embrace, love's adventurous starlight, sparks so magical, elevated dreams, spinning, round and round, entwined, mystical, end poem. And what a beautiful write by Betty. And your thoughts, Rex?
Kind of reminds me of that song, Wish Upon a Star. When you wish upon a star, it makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request to be extreme when you wish upon a star. As soon as good, like a bolt out of the blue. Take steps in and see you through when you wish upon a star, your dreams come true. And actually reminded me quite a bit of just that. It's on that note of, especially with the title, Angelic Love. It is that kind of wishing upon that note delivery, so to speak.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, it does have that kind of sweetness to it, doesn't it? It has a sensuality to it, but it also has a hopefulness, a sweetness, you know, and beautiful and brilliant imagery. I like how it has it speaks on the enchanting mysticism of water and sky, but it also speaks on the hopes of love, the elevated dreams, comforting embrace, love's adventurous starlight, sparks so magical. You know, that I really felt through some of this imagery, sweet cascading blues, illuminating bright hues, swimming deep oceans. It speaks about the beauty of water and sky, but it also speaks on the beauty of the heart and the mind that is allowed to soar, and especially when it's allowed to soar in love. And I think, you know, orgasmic visions, that is just such a wonderful phrase. I love that. So wonderful right here, Betty, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Bugger Art by Peter Fuller. Ride bad prompt, slut on top, poet beneath to rap, mute with rape to surrender as such. Poor fickle bloke, not hip or black, wishing for a muse compliant, join the academy of slayers, aspirants, kill all of them, demanding mothers of racism, sisters and wicked daughters joining in. Weaving spiders for St. George, maiden's web and trap to be released, but strict God, Nietzsche lost, Mary moaning on top. Bugger Renaissance art, horn of high ceilings and sooted candlelight. Wants to preserve a fine chased art, need to pump a rapacious butt. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. There are some about this one really cracked me up. I have to say, I really love the way that Peter took the prompt head on. There was this dark and biting humor from the very beginning, even the title, Bugger Art, Ride Bad Prompt, Slut on Top, Poet Beneath to Rap, Meet with Rape to Surrender as Such. I really like the where he says, weaving spiders for St. George, maiden's web and traps we release. You know, it's like, it makes you think of this painting of St. George and the dragon. But strict God, Nietzsche lost, Mary moaning on top. And I feel like those lines speak on the conflict between sex and religion within art. And then at the end where he says, Bugger Renaissance art, porn of high ceilings and suited candlelight with a question. And I feel like, to me anyways, it speaks on the whole idea that art has gotten to the point where in order to create any shock value, which really you should be doing art for the beauty of it, for the message of it, but sometimes it seems like, you know, people want to do art for the simple shock value of it. And that it's getting to that point where you really have to go to extremes in order to do that. I do really enjoy and appreciate how, you know, he gave me a laugh and plenty of food for thought. You know, I like how this speaks to me on the sexual power dynamics. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I'm wondering if he's not actually biting at the idea, because he hits them. It's join the Academy of Slayers of Sirens. Kill all of them, demanding mothers of racism, sisters and wicked daughters turn against. Kind of hitting on the idea of how everything walks on the angle of racism now. Even the art that's been blessed for its beauty for 300, 400, 500 years is looked upon as something derogatory just because it can be. It kind of hits on the idea of those who don't appreciate or understand or even give a shit, because it does hit a ease the pump rapacious, but that kind of hits me with the idea of, oh yeah, we'll consider art. All those girls out there twerking, that's art. Where is it? Poor fickle bloke, not hip or black, wishing for a muse compliant. So right there, again, that, because he rolls that into the mothers of racism. Everything's being turned to a different tale, and kind of hits on that idea of, hey, we're going to have an art burning here, like a book burning? Is that where we're going?
That is so true, and really good point there, Rex. Yeah, I could see that. I can see that. It's a interesting direction we're going in. That's for sure. So, and what do we got next, Rex?
Is she ice cream or ice burn by King? That one's yours.
All right. Enclosed in iceberg scream, this blue orb enclosure, this dream, now falls ice blue in a veiled wet lace that trickles rough her ice princess face. She, blue, smooth, silky sex, weaving her silver spidering web in this plastic bag enclosed, suffocating and still luminous, where her skin burns insincerely. Blue iced levity in the space between body shudders and milky sugar screams. Levity where ice shards spare no one. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I guess he titled that the right way, Ice Cream and Ice Burn. Kind of walks the note of ice burn, because it's dangerous at the back end. Levity where ice shards spare no one. It does offer the same kind of note with Kay, that first one we read, the same picture. Still walked that note of sensuality, but definitely walked a different thought. We're going with the cold angle instead of the thought to night and day and the blue illumination of the moon upon objects to be seen. But it's walked a different angle, and wow. Ice blue in a veiled wet lace that trickles rough from ice princess face. Already is already painting out. Yeah, off of that question, ice cream or ice burn, this one's definitely ice burn.
I'm on mute. Okay, now I'm off mute. Great observations there, Rex. And that, yeah, exactly. And the title says it all. Is she ice cream or ice burn? And you do. You have this idea of this ice princess, you know, and the sex is good. But, you know, dang, you know, it hurts when those ice shards hit. She is cold. She will move on. You know, this does have a similar tone, as you were saying, to Kay's right. I really love the imagery in this. She, blue, smooth, silky sex, weaving her silver spidering web in this plastic bag enclosed, suffocating and still luminous, where her skin burns insincerely. There's something so visceral about the imagery in that. A brilliant imagery and metaphors, and really was an amazing write on that heart of ice beneath the manipulation of seduction. So very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
To the Sea by Robert J. Tice. Falasa, sea of countless names, so many myths and shards of art, I fail to find you in their frames, or mind more than your surfaces, reducing you to current waves. Mere metaphors of restlessness, unsteadiness, disorder, might. In truth, your truths outswim my sight, their depths and pressures soon exceed our fragile crafts and shallow dives, which lead us reeling to the sea. In want of sun and oxygen, more solid shores of sand and land, and what we think we understand. You're more than all the whales of time, or mariners, their cat-sized ships, and scattered treasures, wishes cast, or sunken cities under tow, the islands, icebergs, oysters, pearls, tsunamis, mermaids, whirls, typhoon, or muppet or puppet mastered by the moon. Your pure release, eternal flows, beyond the narrow compass rose, that boundlessness directions close, more mystery than sonar shows, the sparkling dark of light that glows, and thrives without external lights or clockwork of a day or night. Anonymous is what you'll be, as fathomless as history, engulfing moments, centuries, of mortal lines drawn over earth to signify geography, implying you did the map whole, though no one yet has known your soul. And Tom.
Great read there, Rex. And absolutely a wonderful write by Robert J. Tice. You know, I love the rhyme and flow in this. I love how it pays. It brings out the personification of the sea, Thalassa. The imagery in this is beautiful. It really pays tribute. It personifies the sea, and it pays tribute to both her power, her beauty, and her mystery. The book I'm reading right now is about the men who survived the ship Endurance. It was an exploration to the Antarctic, and they got frozen in the ice, and then they had to abandon the ship, which was basically sinking. And there's something so fascinating because throughout history, so many cultures have had a connection to the sea and realized that the sea or any big body of water like the Great Lakes can both offer up life and take life. I really like this all the way through, but especially you're more than all the whales of time or mariners or capsized ships and scattered treasures, wishes cast or sunken cities under tow, the island, icebergs, oysters, pearls, tsunamis, mermaids, whirls, typhoon or puppet mastered by the moon, your pure release, eternal flows beyond the narrow compass rows that balance direction close, more mystery than sonar shows. Truly, up until recent history, and even now, I mean, the most deepest parts of the ocean, there's still so much exploring and mystery to be done. It is a place of mystery. It is a place that speaks to the soul. I think this is an amazing write and very well done. Oh, and I'm sorry, Rex. Did I? Oh, yes, and your thoughts.
Well, it does point out the notes. It hits on a number of notes. The idea of with that thought was implying we didn't map the whole. Yes, even back when everybody thought the planet was flat, the maps regarded out on the edges that a ship would fall off, and there was notes to places Darby monsters here because of the unknown. You're more than all the worlds of time, or mariners that capsized ships and scattered treasures, wishes cast, or sunken cities, undertowed islands, icebergs, or sea pearls, tsunamis, mermaids, world typhoon, or puppet mastered by the moon. I like that last line there. The puppet, which is mastered by the moon itself. More than that, we've done more exploration in regards to the moon and Mars and some of the other planets than we have actually done of the ocean depth itself. We've still, I think, somewhere between 15% and 20% exploration underneath the ocean, while we know many other things outside of this world itself, which is kind of which tells us the last frontier is not out there. It's actually beneath the ocean itself.
Amen. That is so true. Yeah, I think I remember reading that myself too. There really is so much out there that needs to be explored, and it's fascinating, just absolutely fascinating, the way that, the nature within the ocean is connected to our own lives, and yet there's so much of it we don't know and we don't understand. So really great comment there, Rex. And was that our last poem for the night?
Yep.
All right. So we will carry Eric's over to next week, since I didn't get the SoundCloud up, and that way we'll be able to hear it in his voice. Everyone, please make sure to keep an eye out on all the poetry contests and topic boards put up for our late night poets by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time tonight for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. You can join Dexter and myself 12:30 a.m. on Saturday for Once Upon a Time, Moonshine and Bootlegging. Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, you can join Captain B2 and Gray for Exploring Ekphrasis. Right? Do I have that right? I think so. Yes, I do. I had to think about that. And then that brings us to Sunday's 10 p.m. show, and which, of course, is you, Rex, with Rhythm and Rhyme. So tell us what you got going on there.
Jack Sonny, the other guitarist, Dire Straits.
Very cool. That should be a great show. I am looking forward to that. Some of the couple of contests I have running. Now, for our After Midnight show on Tuesday, we are doing part two of Poe, which, I'm definitely looking forward to that. That's going to be awesome. But I do have an After Midnight contest up with song lyrics from the band St. Vitus, or Vitus, I mean. And so I hope people will check that out. For the next Art of Seduction show, I have The Art of Gail Barry. And for next week's Break On Through, I have The Art of Stephen Lurson. It's going to be just a great lineup of poetry and shows this next coming up week. So very cool. And as always, Rex, thank you for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to James for calling in. Thank you to Ziggy for hanging out on the board for a bit. And thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone. Have a good night, Rex.
Good night, Pam.